Good evening, everyone. Sorry you took a few minutes to get started. We had technical difficulties again. But here we are on our final installment of the Sacred Divine series. This installment, there's no particular goddess that we're going to explore. Instead, what we're doing is we're exploring the different aspect of what is the divine feminine without necessarily associating it to one goddess or another. However, throughout the entire process, we will talk about the different goddesses, and we will see that even though certain goddesses are associated to certain qualities, it's a deformation of quick satisfaction of searching, doing research on goddesses. Because if we take the time to get to know them better, as we've seen in the last 7 podcasts, we realize that they're much more than just a simple aspect. They're the complete sacred feminine representation with all their qualities. The reason why we have this deformation, if you will, is that oracle cards and books don't want to write an entire book on Kuan Yin or on Mary Magdalene, and they want to encompass goddesses. Let's say, for example, oracle cards. Well, you have a oracle card for all of the different goddesses. There's very few decks. Like, I have a particular deck here of a complete deck with only Kuan Yin and all her different aspects and all her different presentations. So most of them, they come with a small definition of small paragraph. Some are beautifully illustrated, which is, I think, the appeal. We buy the books because there's beautiful imagery and it's nice. But often I found, especially researching this entire podcast series, that the information is not complete. They just take the most popular story, or they take the one that suits the need for whatever quality they want for this particular goddess. And a lot of the things are in the symbolism or in the meaning of their entire presence or influence is relegated to the dungeons. And so I find that very sad. And that's why when I presented those particular 7 goddesses, I wanted to present them as a most complete portrait as I could. So today, and honestly, I could keep going and do a pantheon of goddesses for the rest of the year. However, there's other topics I would like to explore with you guys and present to you guys. So I don't want to focus on just goddesses for like a year and a half. So I want to get to the meat of things. I want to get to the importance of these aspects of the divine sacred feminine. We can finally gather them together, and we can see that depending on the pantheon of all these different women being represented by the Greeks or the Roman, we're going to realize that even they recognize that certain goddesses had different aspects. Certain books will associate the goddesses to water and the moon, and then they're leaving it at that. However, it's very hard to associate Pele, who is the goddess of volcanoes, to water. And so today, we're really going to explore that the divine feminine gave birth to matter, and therefore she's represented in all 4 elements. She is mostly associated to the moon, but there are instances of the goddess being the goddess of light. Now, some say, well, she's the goddess of light because the moon reflects the light at night, but she's the night light. But it's not quite the case for all the goddesses. Some of them are associated with the sun. So in that essence, it means that she's everywhere and she's all around us. So we're going to hopefully present that tonight to you guys, and you will be able to get a clear picture of the divine feminine. And then you can choose to work with a specific goddess if you like, because then you will realize that whatever goddess you pick from whatever culture or country or religion, it's usually representing the multiple aspects of the goddess anyway. And so the goddess has many aspects. If we look, for example, at Kuan Yin, Kuan Yin is, in most tarot deck, not tarot deck, oracle cards or books, she will be presented as the goddess of compassion. But then when we did the podcast on Kuan Yin, we found out that she's the goddess of mercy, that she hears the prayers of all the world. So she's listening, she's caring and nurturing us. She's also referred to the one, the mother of them all, because she loves all sentient being more than a mother loves her child. She's also very fierce. Remember when she decided that she would stay and not enter Nirvana and make sure that all sentient being get out of samsara, the cycle of reincarnation, and go to Nirvana. She became a Bodhisattva. She's a protector. People pray to her when they travel, and the sailors, the people who are traveling, pray to her. But she's also the protector of the physical realm, but also the spiritual realm. She's often depicted with a child in her arm as the connection for her fertility. And although she's not known to have children or given birth to children, she is still representing this aspect of the sacred feminine. She will banish negativity. She will balance karma. She will help the soul travel. She's associated to healing and the transcendence and transformation from material worries into the spiritual freedom that we're looking for. And lastly, but not the least, is she's associated to peace and nonviolence. So Kuan Yin, once we do the research, once we read all the documentation, and it does require a lot of research, we find that she's much more than just the goddess of compassion. She's a fully loaded sacred feminine in personification of what the sacred feminine represents. Now, the sacred feminine concept or idea or divinity applies to men and women, and it applies to everything. And so even men can benefit from listening to this sacred divine feminine talk, because they hold the principle of male, but also of female. The soul is androgynous, meaning that the soul is both female and male. Like everything that's been created, the yin and the yang, everything has both polarity inside of it. This is what actually holds it together. One attracts, one retracts, and together creates movement, it creates life. So, therefore, although we find ourselves as women thinking we emulate the feminine principle, it's men can also emulate it. And it also, the goddess, we tend to have, if we would describe what is feminine, depending on who we talk to, we might get a very weak kind of description. And we're going to see tonight that the goddess is about power and strength, as well as compassion and love. And there's this fierceness to the feminine divine principle that is present. And I'm so excited to share that with all of you. And so, the symbolism of the goddess is often associated to the moon, to, like I said, the water element, but we're going to see she's associated also to all the elements. She's associated to all directions. She's very close to nature, to birthing, to cycles of change. The cycle of life is very, very tied to the goddess. One of the greatest things that the goddess does is to be of service to the world, to serve. But it also goes beyond that, as it's a gift of that adaptability, transformation, and then transforming in all realms, that it's whether it's material, that it's mental, emotional, or spiritual. So the principle of devotion and forgiveness is principally a principle of the feminine. And this is where, you know, we see men being devoted, we see men being forgiving. So, but these are the nature of the feminine inside of them. The goddess is, lastly, the keeper of the internal mysteries, the process of finding our own divinity and bringing the divine back into our daily lives. Meaning by that is realizing that we are divine, but we still will take out the garbage and we still will wash the floors and we'll still do dishes. But we will do so as divine beings. So an example of that would be that you will compost, you will recycle, you will be more careful of the trash that you... Do you understand? You're not just throwing your garbage out. Now you have a consciousness that's been awakened to the fact that everything is connected and you need to lessen your consumption of garbage to create less garbage and allow the planet to restore herself and to rehabilitate herself. And so in everything that we do, we continue doing it, but with a grander awareness and consciousness of the effect of our actions, our thoughts, and our words are having in the world around us, not just in the material world, but also in the mental, emotional, and spiritual aspect of it as well. Now, one of the greatest aspect of the Divine Feminine Principle is that, first of all, it is what gave birth to the universe. It is the first thing there was is divine will. And we saw in the creation myth talk that it's all about an awareness, a consciousness, a word, a thought coming into being. And then this presence deciding that it didn't want to be alone anymore. And by not wanting to be alone gave birth to the feminine principle. That's the beginning aspect of the feminine divinity. And she gave birth to material things, meaning she gave birth to the planets, the stars, the galaxies. And then on Earth, then often a different goddess will be attributed. One goddess will be attributed the birth of the stars and the planets and all that. And another one will be attributed the birth of the trees, the lakes, the oceans, and eventually the human race. Such great goddess can be represented as Gaia. But interestingly enough, it was Spider Woman. And during all these weeks and of research, I found that the Spider Woman, which I knew was the Native American stories, was also found, the spider aspect of it was also found in the India, and her name is Biliku. And this is what I love. When I start branching out, when I start, instead of focusing on one particular culture or one particular, tradition, then we open our minds and we realize, oh, so there is something of the same nature of the spider in two different completely opposed continents in the world that have no influence on each other and that actually have the similar stories. We'll find the same thing about the flood, and we'll find the same thing about... So one of these days, maybe that's what I'll present to you guys if you're interested, is presenting these myths, like we did the creation myth, but I could do the flood myth, I could do the end of the world myth and the creation myth, and go over all these different cultures that are joining in their stories, even though they're not really had any means of communicating at the time or sharing these stories. And yet the stories are the same. We learn through these stories. They are what we call myth was at one point history. And so we need to pay attention. However, the thing is that unlike history, because it became myth, some facts were exaggerated and some of the meaning being more symbolism than actual acts, that's where we lost some of what the people were trying to say to us through those stories. But the beginning aspect would be also Hathor. It would be Nut for Egypt, the white buffalo calf women. She arrived at the very beginning trying to teach humans, although she brought some ceremonies later on. So she keeps coming back trying to teach and guide her people. But she was there at the very beginning instructing people not to be cannibals and how to live and hunt and very basic thing of the culture that has been thought by the goddess. There's also Aditi in India and Urda for the Celts, as well as Sophia. In the Aztecs, the goddess Xochiquetzal gives birth to the human race and language. And for Polynesia, it would be Omea. So these goddesses are primarily known for giving birth, for the beginning of life. They're responsible for creation. So beyond that, this aspect of the goddess is then passed on. We are passing on to the different aspects of the goddess. But once she's already created the world, we're done with it, kind of thing. But it comes back, this aspect of giving birth, into the motherhood aspect of the goddess. So although these goddesses seem to be in a completely separate class, they're still birthing something. They're still creating something. And that's what the divine aspect continues in our daily lives. We continue with this creation. We continue with those aspects. Now, depending on the source that we're going to use, we find that the goddess can be divided into a multitude of aspects with the same name, like we saw with Kuan Yin, or like the Romans. The Romans like to have Artemis, one name, Artemis, another name. And what they were trying to, it was still Artemis, but it was different aspects of Artemis. And she fulfilled different roles, and she might have been married to different people or did different things. And so that's why I wanted at this point to stop looking at goddesses and really start looking at the aspects. One of the main things that we can read or hear about when it concerns the goddess is the three-phase goddess, right? And that's, again, that is something that is distributed around the world. So it's not particularly adjusted to one particular culture. Those phases mean usually the maiden, the mother, and the crone. Going through the different phases of innocence, the maiden having her periods or menstruation becomes the maiden. So before that, she's the child. She becomes the maiden, but she's still innocent. She's still pure. And then eventually she'll go into marriage, become a mother. And that's the second aspect. And then eventually she goes into menopause, which is the crone stage, where there's no longer a fertility. So she can't fulfill this aspect of being a mother anymore. She becomes the wise old lady, the one true that gained her experience and all that. Now, the Fates in Greece were represented by these three women. In Scandinavia, they're called the Norns. They're blind. However, those are three blind sisters that are same age. And they're surrounded by the strings that represents the life of every human. And when one line is cut, they blindly, like the Fates, cut the line. And so they cannot pursue vengeance, or they're in charge of taking care of the weak lines and the weak cords and things like that. Now, the Morrigans would be they were fighters. They were sometimes referred to as witches. Very powerful Irish triple women, three sisters, who again came to the defense of the Irish people. And in Russia, they're called the Zoraya. So, what I personally found is missing in all of these is I think that the child, before you become the maiden, before you have your period and your first blood, as they call it, I think it leaves a huge void on a very important part of what a woman is. The maiden may be innocent, but she's also entering sexuality, sensuality. And I think the pure innocence would come from a child. But that could be given to a male or a female at that point. But I think that we should go beyond the number three and go and look into number four, which is what we'll explore later. I don't want to give it all away now. So the first thing about the goddess is love. It's often represented to the maiden aspect, but once we look at it, it also appears as a mother. It also appears as the wife. It also appears as the middle-aged woman, as she now cares for her community, her village, or looks after the grandchildren. So, but she does so from a wise or old sage kind of aspect of it. But there's love is present for the entire span of the different aspect of the goddess. The evolving of the stereotypes in our culture has affected how we see the lover. So, you know, we think that women should look to be loved, should look a certain way and have a certain shape and be a certain age. In the 1920s, girls were thin and short. And then in the 50s, Marilyn Monroe arrived, and she was all curvy and beautiful. And then we jump back to the 1970s, where you had to be like Stickman and Match Woman. And then the media, plastic surgery, fashion, told us that beauty was just unachievable by standards and required surgery. So the concept of beauty and who we should love and what is beautiful varies a lot, especially in a very short period of time. If we go back to the Renaissance, it was when women had a surplus of weight, because that meant opulence, that meant wealth, that meant they were fed. In certain cultures, beautiful is having wide hips, because that means you can bear children. Also, so the concept of beauty varies very much from one culture to the next. But now we're mainstreaming this beauty because everybody's being affected by social media. Everybody's been affected by magazines, papers, TV, and we are being bombarded by unreasonable aspect of what a maiden or a woman or the crone should look like. The crone has been basically completely removed. We can't look old. Old is ugly. And we don't appreciate this wisdom. We just, we're stuck in this role that we need to pretend that we're young forever. So the maiden, as her first experience, love, is the pureness of love at that stage. So the love is present at every stage, but for the maiden, it's her first experience. It's also not necessarily a sexual love, but she might find the power of her sexuality, the power of her sensuality, and become a femme fatale. But it's more than just manipulating men or having sex. It's about owning the body. It's about making decision and developing acceptance of yourself as your body changes into womanhood. This is very difficult, even for men. So we're not saying here that we're holding the monopoly on transformation and change and the difficulty of going through puberty and changing. But the changes in our body happen so quickly, and especially in this day and age, we don't have a rite of passage anymore. We don't have a way to let the girls be girls. Girls are 13 and 14 and they look much older than they are. There's no transition being in this space of owning up to being sensual or sexual or becoming ready to be a mother and a wife. And so we tend to associate love with sexuality. But love can be romantic, love can be passionate, but it can also be a platonic love, the love of friendship. And so we're going to see aspects of the maiden that encourage this this time and this space for women to live and learning about their body and owning their body, and therefore setting boundaries and finding out what it is they want. I was reading a Facebook post just earlier today, and it said, if you don't know what you want, you can't be mad that you're not actually getting what you want. You have no idea what it is you want. So you're wishy-washy about what you want, and you get a wishy-washy response. So this time of puberty is again associated to the transformation of the woman, which is the leading principle for the feminine, the divine feminine principle. It's transformation. We are in constant evolution. We are in constant change. We change shape. We change roles. Our body changes. So the child becomes a woman. And the innocence is transformed by our ability to become fertile. So she can still have somewhat of an innocence. But the idea is that once she transforms into a woman, she needs to eventually realize that these changes are to eventually have a child. Persephone, the butterfly maiden, are examples of that, of this transformation. But they're both also a symbol of hope, meaning that they start as a caterpillar and there is a time of transformation. And this is especially for the butterfly maiden. it specifically explains to us that there's a time of cocooning. There is a time that we're not supposed to be out in the world without having integrated these changes. We need to take time to adapt to this new body or this new role, and then we can get out of the cocoon and fly away. It also represents the hope principle that things will change, still things will transform, and things become always more and more beautiful. So nothing remains the same. And with this constant evolution and growth, we are evolving towards something grander, something more beautiful. Psyche, in the Greek methodology, is associated to butterfly, as well as Semele, which is an Amazon goddess. So this aspect of the young girl still transforming into the woman who will eventually be able to take on a husband has to have this time to grow, to change, to transform first. Then would come the aspect of the marriage in the goddess. The goddess is the protector of marriage. The goddess is the overseer of fidelity and monogamous relationship. One of those interesting goddesses is Hera, who's married to Zeus, who's a womanizer and keeps cheating on her every chance he gets. Frigg, also goddess of marriage, also plagued with a Odin that keeps, you know, frolicking around all over the place. Both stories tell us that Hera and Frigg are still loving their husband. They're still the keepers of the home. And it doesn't matter that they were beautiful, powerful, loving, and intelligent. If their husband will wander, they will wander. No, so it's not an impression on how beautiful you are if someone is unfaithful to you. It more has to do with the fact that they don't respect you. And it's not that you don't own it, because they're both queens. They're both owning their power. But they're not with the right person. And this brings on the aspect of the very angry aspect of the goddess, which we'll explore with Kalima in a little bit. So, but that's when they say hell has knows no fury like a scorned woman. It's a warning to all men out there. If you're going to be unfaithful, that your wife is beautiful or not, there'll be a price to be paid eventually. So the role that the goddess is playing in these stories is that it explains to us that we cannot destroy what is good. We need to change what is not working. And again, a story of transformation. Not being stuck in a role that allows us to be angry and not do anything about it. These powerful goddesses actually get out of their situation, confront the husband, and seek justice. So the Hera and Frigg give birth to multitude of children. So they also have motherhood, but specifically these stories relate to the marriage part of the goddess. So being united, being working together and coming together. Now comes the motherhood aspect, which is linked with protection and guidance. And I think that in the Hera and Frigg's case, their role of protector, their role of guiding, their role, the other important roles make them realize that they can't just abandon everything because one aspect is not perfect or actually going the way they want. It's a lesson in teaching us that difficulties would present itself, and we must overcome these difficulties because we're so much more than just that. And we have to remember everything that we are in order to be able to be strong and successful. So the motherhood aspect involves as well Mother Nature and Mother Earth. It's about being the giver, the fertility. So one of the goddess in Rome was called Juno. Juno is where the Romans like to split her. So, for example, Juno Moneta was about money. It was caring for the material aspects of the household, organizing and paying the bills. But Juno Lucina was called upon to protect expectant mothers and the growth of their babies after they were born. So Juno is one of the examples where if we start calling all of her names, we will see that it explains each and every one of these aspects. Just like many other goddesses in Roman and Greece, and all over the world, really, motherhood is one of the most trying time in as far as the feminine principle goes, because there's first of all, there's those trying to get pregnant, then there's carrying the baby to term, then there's giving birth to this baby, and then there's being able to care and feed this baby. So there's multiple aspects of motherhood that is represented. Even a man can give birth. He can give birth to ideas. He can give birth to businesses. So in that sense, even though you are a man, this principle of giving birth to things is would still apply to you. And to get the most help and the most guidance, it would be the sacred feminine principle that would be helping in those opportunities or situations. The power of the goddess continues to influence the creation because, let's say, for example, with the Egyptian, the goddess Renenet was present at every birth because she was the one gifting the soul to the baby. So it was a concept that, although it's a very mechanical, very animal concept of reproducing, you can create this baby, but without the soul, it's not animated. And the soul is a gift from still the original concept of the divine goddess. She is still present, she's still active, and she's still allowing us to continue to create with her blessing. And that's when the gifting of the soul comes in. So she's present at each childbirth, and she, in the Egyptian tradition, will give the mother the child's soul name. And interestingly enough, Ajisa does the same in Siberia. So there is something sacred about the child's name, about the way you will name him. In many cultures, the names are kept secret and someone's giving more of a nickname. Or in other cultures, like the Native Americans, when you come of age, you receive a new name. When you accomplish something, your name will be lengthened or will be modified as each of the successful challenges or experiences in your life is overcome. So then the power of the name comes from being bestowed on these souls. Now, the all of the myths are there to support us and to show us or teach us something. In the case of babies, Demeter loses her daughter, not in childbirth, but she loses her daughter into marriage. And she's completely heartbroken because she can't be with her daughter. So it's like the emptiness syndrome. And because she was so invested in motherhood, she doesn't take the time to go into this cocoon, this transformation, to see what she can be now that she's no longer a mother. And the story gives us hope in the renewal of this, you know, transformed relationship as her daughter returned after being in prison in hell with Hades. The idea is that even through the marriage, there should be a time to settle into this new situation. And then as we move into motherhood, the same thing needs to happen. But as the children leave the nest, or the children grow up and leave us, then again, we need to take a time for ourselves in order to be able to re-examine what is our role. How can we continue to be ourselves and to be of use and to feel validated and all of those things? Without taking the time to do that, that's when people feel lost, that when people feel depression, they feel, and that's what the experience that Demeter goes through. She's completely lost in the world. She's a vagrant. She doesn't take care of herself anymore until someone finds her out, and then she returns to her glory. So it's important that we remember that it's not because we become a mother that we're no longer everything else. As we age and as we grow, hence the crone is so wise at the end, because she realizes that she's still the maiden. She can still be innocent. She can still be beautiful. She can still be a mother as a grandmother or supporting someone in the community. And that's the integration of this wisdom that is the key in the end. The reason why the aspect of the feminine is a period of growth. It shows us that we're not supposed to be born with everything in hand. It's a matter of growth as we go through our different experiences that will allow us to be able to embrace the full divine principle. Now, the role of protector starts showing up as the mother. Before then, the feminine principle is more into the joy and the being in the moment and all those things. But the sacred feminine offers protection to not just mothers, but newly emancipated children. It's the mother aspect that brings in the protector. Kiji Jotun in Japan, or Abeona in ancient Rome, continued to oversee the life of children. So a mother could keep asking these aspects of the feminine to keep looking over their children and keep protecting the children. If any of you have dealt with children that they're yours or, you know, nieces or nephews, you will know that even though they're adults, you still worry about them. You're still wondering, are they doing okay? Are they looked after? Are they eating right? And in those instances, that is the aspect of the sacred feminine that comes in. Then, and different aspects don't have to come in a certain order, right? So the creativity aspect of the goddess could come in as a child, could come in as the maiden, it could come in as the mother. It could be present for the entire time. But the creativity and inspiration is also a very spiritual feminine trait. It gives birth to those projects, those ideas. The realm of the creativity can cover the arts as painting, writing, acting, but also in the crafting. And when I say crafting and building, it could be making, you know, it's not necessarily has to be done by women. We're talking about building chariots, inventing the wheel, building tables and chairs, or an airplane. And finally, creativity also involves healing. It's where the healing presents itself, as it is inspired by herbs, by intuition, and discovery. The arts are often devoted to the power of a muse, right? We know that some French painters had different muses at different times of their lives, and that's what led to their inspiration to create the feminine in their life. Help them manifest a certain beauty. And I'm not necessarily talking about nude pieces here, but just to have them around. Monet, for example, loved to have these women that he wasn't necessarily sexually interacting with, but he just liked the essence of the feminine that surrounded him, that inspired him. Through creativity, we can also see things that led to weaving and agriculture and pottery. And also the improvements, right? So our clothes have changed. The embroidery that we can put on, we can embellish things when time is given to us. And as we develop more and more tools to facilitate the basic of everything, like weaving a cloth, then gives us more time to hand stitch or decorate the piece. All of those are associated to aspects of the divine feminine. So true motherhood, love is still present. Creativity can be present. True marriage, the same thing happens. Yes. So the idea is that love and creativity are constant aspects of the goddess, that through her different experiences, she's being influenced in growing and in changing and continuing to transform. So the transformation is also an aspect that is present all along in the goddess life. All of this power of creativity and inspiration helps to birth, manifest abundance that it is in nature or through harvests or, you know, products that we can do. The ability to manifest in the world those thoughts and idea and give it form, that is a feminine aspect as well. Manifesting, if we go back to the creation myth, he manifested that he wanted a companion, but it's the companion that gave birth to matter. He gave birth to himself, becoming conscious and aware that he exists, and he wished for her to exist, but she is the one that gave it form. And so that's how it becomes the manifesting. I mean, you can't separate the Trinity. They're glued together. They work together. They're interwoven into each other. But going from a thought into an actual concrete project or action, that is the feminine principle. Healing, therefore, is a manifestation of inspiration that helps to change the body, to restore it to a balance, to complete health. This can be achieved through the healing herbs, but to also chanting, dancing, and for a deeper kind of healing, going deep inside to look what is needed and what is not needed, what needs to stay, what needs to go, and do this introspection work. All this is done through the sacred feminine. There are goddesses that are worshipped for their healing abilities particularly, but they're also often linked to wisdom. So as we're moving away from motherhood, the healing aspect, or maybe the inspiration of seeing your sick child or seeing, you know, this need that comes, and now having developed the compassion of motherhood, we're able to go further in trying to protect and heal the people that are under our protection. And so, it would seem that the healing and the wisdom do go hand in hand. Like Hygieia in Crete is one of the goddesses related to healing and wisdom. But there's also Ogboenba from Nigeria. It's very interesting because she wants to give birth. She's a great healer. She's a very, very powerful goddess, but she's unable to conceive a child. And just like for losing a child or the child leaving the empty nest, this story is important because it tells us that even though she's a goddess, even though she practiced healing, it was not meant for her to be giving birth. And so even though she passes through seven kingdoms, she never succeeds in getting pregnant. Now, this is very important because we will talk later on about number seven, and passing through those seven doors or those seven kingdoms as being particularly the work that needs to be done with the sacred feminine. And even though she does all the work, she's unable eventually to succeed in getting pregnant. But she becomes the matron who helps all the midwives and helps birth the children. Sometimes I have some friends who were trying to conceive and they couldn't. And eventually they adopted a child. And that released something in them, the stress of conceiving or whatever. And they were able to then conceive their own children. But sometimes our soul comes on this earth because it wants to adopt those that are left behind and unwanted. It's the greatest gift of love and compassion. Even though you don't conceive them, you're still there loving, caring for them. And I think that was the experience for this Nigeria goddess, is that she realizes that her time and her talents were best used to help mothers give birth and help them, the matrons, to be able to support the midwives. So there's so many stories that, interestingly enough, if you start digging into them, they cover just about everything a woman could think of imagining of going through in a lifetime. And those stories and those myths are there to give us the wisdom that the story is trying to impart us. And this wisdom comes with the stage of the crone. Now, with her life experience and her knowledge, wisdom is she's applying to what she knows to the highest good of all. The wisdom is used to free us human from our own limitations and recognizing that the divine is living inside of our body. That is the ultimate divine principle. That is what many of the goddesses that we looked at is trying to teach us. And they're going about different ways. So, you know, it's like explaining fractions to a child. If they don't get it one way, it's no use repeating it and repeating it. They just don't get it. You have to change your imagery. You have to change the way you explain things so that these children are able to actually understand the concept you're trying to impart to them. And that's the true wisdom of the crone, is that now that she's got multiple experiences, now that she's been through many life experiences, she's gathered knowledge, and now she's able to explain things better and allow us to, allows us to understand what's going on. And so that we may either effect change or accept that these things cannot be changed. And that's when strength is required. Strength is also, I'm not saying that it's not a male divine principle, but the strength, inner strength, that both men and women need to fully develop as enlightened beings come from the divine feminine principle. To resist temptation, to speak our truth, to forgive ourselves our misdeed, to find compassion for everyone. If we take the Huna principle, we don't need to forgive other people. We need to forgive ourselves. And we need to take responsibility for creating a situation where another person hurt us. And in this sense, it's the strength to change, to evolve, and not always take the easy way out. So, you know, the saying, it's often the right way is often the hard way. But it's true because it asks for us, as we're challenged in our values, to stick to our values, which at times may require sacrifice. And so we need to find the strength to be able to continue on, to live past the fact that we've lost some loved ones, and working through difficult times like famine or loss of employment or something that undermines our values and our principles and our way of life. All of those are inner strength. So you need to be mentally strong. You need to be emotionally strong. And that's the domain of the divine feminine. It's about confidence. It's about intelligence, about being bold. And it's about being proactive. It's not about sitting here and being victimized. It's about, and so you can see how this applies to both men and women. We're not talking about being physically strong. We're talking about being able to go through life and face all the ordeals and keep moving forward and keep advancing and keep getting up every day and keep doing our best every single day. One of the most powerful goddesses that represents strength is Sekhmet. And I met her in a temple in Egypt, and it was a very humbling moment, and I was completely alone in the temple with Sekhmet statue there. And if you search the internet, you will find a picture of her with a lot of orbs around her, and someone took pictures, and you can see all the energies that is floating around this statue. And I wanted to be humble when I faced the statue. So I bowed and I closed my eyes, and right away I heard the message, "Open your eyes, look at me." I was like, okay. Shocked. Oh my God, what's going on? And she's like, "What do you want?" And at the time I was able to somewhat vocabulize, express what I wanted. And she was very straightforward. She was very direct. And she made me realize, again, if you're wishy-washy about what you want, then don't wonder that you're not getting exactly what you want. You don't even know what that is. And so this powerful, strong energy is also represented by Artemis or Diana. Artemis being the Greek version, Diana being the Roman version. But she's a self-reliant, independent woman. Just like Hestia, She decides not to marry, which at the time, now, you know, nowadays, a woman decides not to marry. We in North America, we think, or in some parts of Europe, we think, well, yeah, sure. But there's still children bride being married at 12 and 13. You can't tell me that these girls have been given an option, a choice, and understand what they're getting themselves into. The choice not to marry, especially in the times of the Romans and the Greek, when women were pretty much seen as property or slaves, or a way to get richer, or a way to make political connection, they weren't treated as beings. So this aspect of the the goddess that was everywhere was telling women, you can be strong, you can set boundaries, you can protect your privacy, you're allowed to have female companions, and you're allowed to take that time before you jump into marriage to develop as a woman. And for that, and that's what Artemis and Diana do. They develop as their autonomy, they develop their freedom, they develop their freedom of choice and how to make a choice. So they're living in nature, not caring about their physical appearances, which is, again, something that was, people had to, the women always have to be beautiful. They always have to be looking a certain way. And we look down on a woman that's going to show up at work with a ponytail or no makeup on, or... Artemis and Diana want to go beyond these physical aspects of themselves and find that inner strength in them, find this ability to connect to their power, and so they can come back as women. Why is this so important? Because we have to look back at history. We have to go back and how things were. Women were undermined. Women were not treated well. They're still, to this day, not treated all that well. We have all these shelters to help women that are being beat and abused. As long as there's prostitutes, someone is using and abusing a woman that doesn't have, that hasn't found her power, that her power was either broken or stolen from her at a very young age. We need to be able to find a safe space for women to again grow back into this autonomy and this freedom and owning their choice, giving them a choice, giving them a voice. Aphrodite is very different in that sense, because she finds her power and she embraces sexuality and she claims that as her birthright. And she also doesn't want to be married, because she says, I should be free to choose. And if Zeus is free to wander, and if all these other gods are free to sleep whoever they want, why should I be tied into marriage? And why shouldn't I be free to do the same? So these three women are examples of owning who you are and owning your choices. They, all three of them, take responsibility for their choice. They're not complaining that there's no one hunting for them. They go and hunt for themselves. They understand that there's a certain part of them that has made choices, and they live with those choices. Like Aphrodite, in more modern times, examples of someone owning their sensuality would be a geisha in Japan, or a kisang in Korea, or in Greece they were called etere. They were kind of what you would say courtesans that were paid for their company, their ability to talk, to hold actual conversation. So they weren't ignorant. They could read, they knew poetry, they knew history. They could play music, they could sing. They were entertainers, but not of sexual nature. They were held of above class. Now, does that mean that there was no prostitute in those countries at that time? No. The prostitutes still exist, but they were a different class. These women, owning to their beauty, their sensuality, also owned the fact that they didn't want to allow their body to be used. So, it's really a matter of partly luck. If you were trained, you had to have talent, and you were basically a slave sold into a kisang in Korea. But you were educated, and although because you were a kisang, you would never be able to marry. It afforded you nice clothes. It afforded you lodging. It afforded you much more than a slave could have had, just because you had a certain talent. So there's a part of these women that, like the femme fatale, owning who they are and living by their own rules in a world that allowed very little of that. So to be or not to be with a man? That is the question. The stories of these women doesn't mean that we must all flock to the woods and abandon our husbands and boyfriends. It does, however, illustrate that we need to respect ourselves, our values, and we need to live honorable lives according to our standards, and not those dictated by a society, a media, or a fashion. It means that rather than needing a man to take care of you and save you and all these, you know, these stories where the princess always has to wait for the prince to fight all evils and then come and rescue her, we need to be able to be with a man that will be willingly sharing his life as equals with us. Does that mean that we're going to fight to do the same things all the time? No, because we can accomplish different tasks, but appreciate each other equally and honor that each of us is contributing to this relationship or this marriage in equal value. And so, and this will comes from the strength of the feminine principle, that we recognize who we are and the impact that we have on each other's lives. Now, the crone, the time of the crone usually comes at the menopause stage, because fertility is over, so she really cannot be a mother technically anymore. She can't give birth. And so it's a time for the elders to be recognized as they as they enter this phase of having this much experience. But right now, we no longer respect our elders, whether it be feminine or masculine. There's no respect in being old. There's no honor in being old. We try to remove and eliminate all signs of aging through surgery, makeup, dyeing the hair. We make pretenses that old is not pretty. Old is not something you want. We've lost the importance of this wisdom that has been acquired and accumulated. We tend to think that only young people can take care of the young kids. And there's been experiments conducted in Europe where they mixed a daycare with an old folks home so that the old folks are coloring with the young kids. And they have the patience of all these kids' questions. And the kids bring them joy and innocence back into their lives. The research proved that both were contacts were highly beneficial for both parties. And so they're building more and more of these places where the old and the young are going to be reunited again and being together again. We need to return to valuing the wisdom that comes with age and the experience of having lived, having lost, have been loved, have been betrayed, and having learned to forgive, so that we can reintegrate all the parts of ourselves and appreciate all the parts of ourselves. For a lot of people, getting white hair is a huge ordeal, or getting their wrinkles, and that's all they're focusing on, but they're not focusing on the important things. And if we if our society wasn't so stuck on beauty but more on other qualities such as wisdom, all of a sudden an entire aspect of materialism would just crash and fall to pieces. They're creating a need that doesn't need to exist. We need to use our own intelligence to understand that we don't need to worry about those things. Because if that's how you're being judged, then the people around you are extremely shallow. And you need to surround yourself with people who actually care about who you are, what you've been through, value your experience, and encourage you. Not say, oh, you're not worthy anymore, you're not good enough anymore, because, you know, you're getting too old and you're showing signs of aging. You just need to transform who is in your circle around you. And maybe if we transform enough circles and we tell our young girls that it's not just the beauty that's important, but it's all these other aspects of the sacred feminine that matter, that maybe we can change and affect society and our communities to re-examine how we view ourselves as women as we go through these different steps in our lives. Because the key is transformation. We are in constant movement. We are constantly transforming. And it's not about just physically transforming. It's also our emotional growth. It's about our mental growth. But eventually, it's the transformation that we need to pay attention to, is that the soul leaves the physical body and the physical body dies and we depart this third dimensional world and return to the material world. The goddess, true to her form, is present at the moment of her birth, is the present to and accompanies us through the many stages of our lives, and she is there at the end to accompany the soul to travel to the next destination. Now, depending on the culture, the next destination could be heaven, could be nirvana, could be hell. But in some cases, it's to be held until the next reincarnation and just this place. You haven't completed your cycle, so you will return. One of these transformation goddesses is Pele. Pele is an Hawaiian goddess associated with volcanoes and destruction, much like Kalima, which is an Indian goddess. They're known for their strength, but they're known for their destructive power, their fierceness, and their anger. But in every time of transformation, we need to deconstruct the false belief. We need to demolish or eliminate the relationships around us that are no longer serving us. We need to make room for the new. One of the goddesses is married to this king, and she dies, but she gets rescued. And I'll talk to her after. Yeah, I'll finish the story and showing you that when things no longer serve you, you have to let them go. But this destruction that is associated to Pele and Kalima, you can't just think of it in a material way. You have to, when you're broken down, when you're depressed, when you have a nervous breakdown, when you go through these highly emotional experiences and you get this, you feel like you're breaking, that is also the destruction that Kalima and Pele are part of, because they're rebuilding you stronger. They will be able to make you solid, and they will create the space that you need to grow, then the space that you need to have new friends, new connections, new people around you. Time is flying. Which leads us to, if the goddess is there to escort us, she has a lot of compassion for us in trying to protect us from ending up in places where we will be harmed or we will be recycled into a rebirth and experience pain and suffering again. The goddess Ariane Rod actually protects the soul in her castle, which is in the Aurora Borealis, until they're reincarnated. But it's a special place for the soul to rejuvenate themselves. So it's a quiet break in between these reincarnation. Now, viewing that the soul is, every time it comes back inside of a body to be reincarnated and reborn, is viewed as an imprisonment. The teaching of the sacred feminine is to help us free the soul from these cycles. The soul is a map that contains all the details about why you are here, what life lessons you came to learn, what are your gifts. And in order to find these answers, what the sacred feminine say, just connect to your soul. Your soul is right in the center of who you are. It's not very far. It's right there. You got to get in touch with it. And how are we going to get in touch with it? What is it that we need to go through in order to actually find this connection. There's many, many, many stories of Persephone or what's her name? We have different goddesses, but they travel and they go either to the great below, they go to hell. Persephone just went straight to hell, the Hades. But they're traveling, and as they're traveling, there's often the number seven in their travels. As we saw earlier, there's the goddess who has to travel through seven kingdoms because she's trying to get pregnant. And even though she succeeded in crossing the seven kingdoms, she's still, it's not her soul's destiny. It's not her soul's fate to have a child. She's meant for something else. Yeah, Inanna, a Sumerian goddess, is she's a goddess, and she's been worshipped for 5,000 years. So it's for the Sumerians, she's very, very important. And she decides to visit her sister in the underworld. And in order to visit her sister, she has to pass through the seven gates of hell. At each gate, there's a guardian. And for each guardian, she has a talisman. But you're not technically supposed to bring anything with you. So you can't bring a big bag or anything. So she wears her crown. She has her hair. She has a necklace. She has a royal robe. She has ointment for the eyes, a breastplate, a bracelet, and a measuring rod and line. And every time she meets one of those guardians, she gives them one of these gifts. Now, if you think quickly, the necklace was in lapis lazuli, which is the throat chakra. The crown is for the crown on chakra. She's got ointments for the hair, so she's got the third eye. She's just like Mary Magdalene, traveling through the seven chakras, trying to open the chakras, trying to open the light, and trying to be able to connect to the soul that way. Once she reaches the center of El, she meets her sister, who's actually angry at her, and her sister kills her and puts her to rot on a rod. Someone comes to give Inanna the food and the water of life, and she is revived, and she's allowed to leave and return as a living being. So she beat death. Now, isn't that interesting that she, just like Jesus Christ, who is a male, was able to get through the seven gates of hell and return. And it still, just like Jesus, took 3 days. This is really important because when we explore in the next segment of the different religions and mystery schools, 3 days is a number about having to face your shadow, having to face your insides. Why is it 3 days? Why is 3 days so significant? Because it didn't happen in 5 minutes. It's trying to say that it was long and arduous and difficult. It was 3 days. For 3 days, she's not eating, she's not drinking, and she's tied to a stake. She's in hell. So during those 3 days, it's the facing of your shadows. It's the looking inside of you and seeing what needs to be changed, what can stay, what can go. Much like her, Ishtar, which is an Egyptian goddess, also had to remove 7 pieces of clothing and jewelry to arrive in hell naked. Why naked? Why are they naked when they get there? Because you're at the very center of your being. You can't hide from anyone there. You can't hide from yourself. You can't hide from your shadow. You are naked in essence. And there, even Ishtar also remains trapped for 3 days, being unable to return to the world of the living until the 3 days are over. Meaning that there is a process. There's a change, a transformation. Like the butterfly is locked in that cocoon for a certain amount of time. It can't just come out. It has to transform. Then it can come out. Much like Kuan Yin and Mary Magdalene, they're representing descent into the subconscious to uncover herself and to truly not just find herself naked, but accepting who we are in this nakedness. Yemanja wears Severn bracelet. It's the symbol that as she's come back, and she has for each of these doors passed and is now the representation of the seven bracelet means that she has overcome these obstacles. The descent to hell to meet your shadow. What is in the shadow, right? Because so many people are afraid to go look inside of themselves and what am I going to find? What's going to be there? It's the things that you fear, the things that you're ashamed of. It's the things that hurt you. But it's also your abilities and your passions and your interests that you were told to hide, that you were told that they were deemed unacceptable at a certain time in your life. And don't be like that. Don't act like that. For example, a recent documentary on Audrey Hepburn, and she's receiving this award for being this wonderful actress. And she says, I was brought up to not draw attention to myself. I was brought up to be quiet. I was brought up. And she's like, and yet I'm earning a living doing the complete opposite of those things. And that's what I mean. But if you are told, don't sing, don't dance, but that's what you want to do. But someone made you stop or made you think that you weren't good enough. I remember someone saying to me in fifth grade, a teacher, she told me, oh, you can't be in the choral because you can't sing. Your voice is terrible. It's horrible. Don't sing anymore. And I believed it. I believed I couldn't sing. But I really loved and enjoyed singing. So I sang in the shower, I sang in the car, and I sang every chance I get. And then eventually I was at church and I was singing the Psalms or whatever it was. And the choral leader came to me and says, I really want you to join and start singing. So you gotta be joking, right? And he's like, no, I'm very serious. I'm like, oh, come on, I can't sing. I've been told I can't sing. And he's like, you're a tenor. Obviously, you can't sing soprano. You can't sing alto, but you have an amazing voice. And I really, really like you to come and sing with us. And so I joined for a few years while I was attending church and I was singing along with them. So sometimes what we put in our shadow is something that was a great gift, a great ability, but we were made to believe that it wasn't. And we gave away that power to that belief. And that's where the destruction comes to place. We have to destroy this old belief that we're not a good singer, or that we're not a good dancer, or that we're not a good writer. And we have to transform it and getting out and back into the light. Someone told me, oh, I'm not a writer. I said, says who? Maybe you're not a good writer, but maybe you're a good storyteller. So why would you stop yourself because someone at one point told you you make too many spelling mistakes, you know your punctuation is terrible, right? So then I suggested that person then record your story, because your stories are great. You're funny, it's hilarious, but at the same time there's a lot of wisdom to be shared through your stories. Why would we deprive ourselves from that because someone somewhere told you you're not a very good writer? And you now believe this. So this 3 days and three nights of death that they experience in hell is the equivalent to what many will call either the dark night of the heart or the dark night of the soul. In these stories, it's 3 days and three nights. In her everyday life, this is where you find yourself in a situation where you are living hell. You're in a situation where you don't see any way out. You feel completely stuck. You feel broken. You feel unable to find solution or find hope. And yet, through this transformation, through this time that is required, you find your strength, you find your power, you find your inspiration. And this is the crucial integration period. The Qatars and other mystery schools would make sure that during this isolation, you weren't disturbed. There's also some Buddhist tradition that you require yourself to be in isolation. You require to become a hermit for some time. Why? Because you can't be, it's too easy to be influenced, and you're in the process of integrating all this information, and it should be pure and it should be unaltered and it should be undisturbed. It is a time where you receive visions, you receive guidance, that you may open your consciousness, like a 3-day ceremony of ayahuasca in Peru. these 3 days are a period of mind opening where you don't have to retreat into yourself and say, what did I just see? What am I just experiencing? How does this apply my life? How does this change my life? And that's what you need to be able to explore. So those 7 doors. Now we're thinking, okay, well, this one gives clothing, the other one gives jewelry. Do I can just walk down the street and hand out things to people? Because I can definitely give 7 things away quite easily. But it's the mystery of the sacred divine of escorting us through this dark night of the soul and bring us back alive. And you see, what was interesting is that after Inanna escaped and was freed after being revived, a soul had to go back and take her place. And she's meeting her best friend and the devout servants, and they all are broken down and sad that she had died. And just like Jesus was not quite, when he was first reappeared, that he wasn't readily recognized, she's not readily recognized either. People are changed through this experience, and because they are changed, their physical appearance may still be there, but they walk differently, they talk differently, they act differently, and so they're almost unrecognizable at the first look. And so eventually she returns to her castle, unable to find someone that she will say to the demon that accompanies her, you can take him. But when she gets back to her castle, her husband is there on the throne, filled with power and joy and not mourning her death. And she's like, you can take him. And again, it's about the symbolism. As she realizes as she comes back that this man doesn't love her. This man doesn't care that she was in hell for 3 days, hasn't mourned her, doesn't look for her, is still sitting on the throne in the castle. And now it's obvious to her that this is no longer serving her, and she no longer wants this in her life. So that's the dark night of the soul. It could be an inspiration, it could be creativity, it could be the discovery of your own strength, it could be anything. But it's always about discovering eventually your true nature, your divine nature. So remember from Mary Magdalene talk, the things to beat is the fear of the unknown. So plunging into darkness or plunging into hell is overcoming this fear. Is overcoming desires and ignorance. And ignorance is not just ignorance. It's all types, right? That's why it's not specifically defined as just knowledge, but it's ignorance in all its forms. It's the fear of death, because we don't die. Our physical body may die, but not our soul. Overcoming the temptations of the flesh, not just in a sexual way, but more into also, you know, food and drugs and alcohol. And all the sensations were more than just a penis or a vagina. There's so much more that can be appealing and distracting us. But there's also the beating the self-righteous materialism, right? So accumulating wealth and needing to be rich and pursuing these at the cost of our relationship, our own health and our own body. And finally, the foolish wisdom. So thinking that we are wise when we're not, or trying to guide others in doing things, but they only benefit us and not necessarily them, and that kind of things. Those are the things to beat. Those are the 7 doors that you need to go through. While you're in your 3 days of the dark night of the soul or the heart, what you're aiming towards. I think it's important. There's the things to beat. But okay, so I beat those things. What does that look like? If there's no more desire, if there's no more sensations that I, you're not succumbing to those. But does that mean that my life gets boring? No. And that's where we learn from Kuan Yin, is that we become mindful. We have an awareness of body and feelings and thought in the world. So rather than seeking to be rich, we seek happiness instead. Rather than ignoring how our body feels or how others around us are feeling, we become mindful of that. we change your perspective and our view of the world to be more accurate understanding of things and the nature of these things. Our intentions are focused towards being positive, to being compassionate, to being loving. Our speech become beautiful in the sense that we no longer lie, we no longer gossip, we no longer are vulgar, and we keep our word and we're honest with our words. Our actions are becoming to help others, are supporting others. They're led by compassion and forgiveness. The livelihood or the way we earn our keep becomes a way that benefits the community as opposed to hurting individuals or ourselves. We maintain our effort and our concentration. So as we get up, each day is a new day, and each new day brings about new effort, new determination, and doing our best through every single day. And living in this here and now, because now we're not worried about the future and we've let go of the past during this dark night of the soul. And so we are finally free to be living in the now and appreciating in each moment. And if truly, and whenever you stop and ask yourself, am I happy right now? 90% of the time, the answer is probably going to be yes. But for the times that you realize I'm not happy, this situation is terrible, and I don't want to go on living like this, then that's your dark night of the soul. That's when you have to go inside, do an introspection, and ask yourself, I need to change. What needs to change for me? What am I lacking? Am I lacking strength? Am I lacking self-love? What is it that needs to be developed inside of me? And taking the time, like the caterpillar going into cocoon, to make that transformation for yourself, to come out the other end beautiful and strong. So I've got very few little time left, but I want to say that the divine feminine principle is mostly related to the moon. And as the moon has different cycles, the new moon is a time to reset, set goals, set intention, create something new, as opposed to the full moon, where it's a time of fruition, it's full, just like the full belly of a pregnant woman. The things also come to light. They're not in darkness. And the goddess, different cycle of the goddess are associated with the different cycles of the moon. The moon affecting water and affecting also the women in their moods and in their periods and stuff like that. But more importantly, the feminine principle is about the cycle of life, the four seasons and the four stage of life, the observant of this life that is guiding us. The changing woman of the Navajo people is born and grows old each year, for representing the same cycle in the Celt tradition, where each season has its time. We have to live in the now of that season. We should eat the fruits and the vegetables and the harvest of that season. We need to honor the cycles of nature. We need to be able to understand that everything is a time and a place, and wanting to rush through certain things won't achieve anything. In some of the myths, a young maiden pretends to prick her finger to pretend that she's bleeding to have access to something that is not yet to be hers, and so has devastating consequences. The greatest truth of the sacred feminine is to be witness to these cycles of life, to the birth and the rebirth of spring and the growth of the summer and the harvest of the fall and the depth of, and the rest of the winter. It's okay to rest. It's normal to rest. It's part of the cycle to give ourselves some time to rejuvenate and to regrow again, to be there. Someone told me, isn't that being selfish? It's not being selfish. It's like being on an airplane and saying you put your mask on first and then you help the person beside you. Why? Because if I don't take the time to reset myself, to rejuvenate myself, then I won't have the energy to be able to pursue and do all the things that are expected of me or wanted of me or that I want to do. So much like the medicine wheel of the Native American, it represents the ever-changing nature of us traveling this circle and coming back again, but wiser and having grown from this past cycle. So that the cycle lasts as a year or lasts periods of time, it doesn't really matter. The whole idea is to always integrate what you're learning into your everyday life. And so there's a time to sow, there's a time to grow, there's a time to harvest. And you have to, this time to rest is to evaluate and integrate what you've learned in the past cycle and gain in that wisdom to be able to eventually be able to grow more. And then don't do the same exact thing the next year, but improve and change and effect change. And this time of rest is also the time in numerology or in astrology or in tarot that tells you this is the time where you need to analyze what your behavior is. So if the outcome is not what you wanted, then change. Change what you're doing. Take the time to examine what it is that could be changed so that the outcome will be what you want. Then I wanted to talk about the four elements because the goddess is often associated with water, which is true. She's linked to oceans, rivers, rain, cloud, mist, dew, and all those things. And the water represents emotions, feelings, relationship, love, internal currents, intuition, empathy, inner knowing. It's very true. But goddesses like Pele, who are about volcano, or Vespa, who are about the earth spire in the Roman's home, they're associated with the fireplace, the center of the home, light, candles, volcano, anything hot. This fire represents the inspiration, the courage, the vision, the cleansing, and the transformation. So all other positive aspect of this divine feminine. Air, the goddess of air are the ones that fly, that live in the sky, that travel the wind. And the air represents the mind, the ideas, the intellect, communication, thought, information, writing, language. So to say that the goddess is only about water, I think is a minimization of who she truly is. Because she's also earth. Right? Through Gaia, she's Mother Earth. Demeter is the goddess that brings fertility in the spring and when Persephone goes back into the depths of hell with Hades, she brings about barren land of the winter. The earth is fertility, sustenance. It's also foundation, stability, grounding. It's often associated with money, work, food, shelter, and sensual pleasures. All other aspects of the goddess. So the goddess is not just water. The goddess is all the elements. And in conclusion, the goddess's wisdom from all of our faces that we saw tonight are both important to men and women as it restores balance and happiness in people's lives. We've asked men to become only one aspect of themselves and they need to be able to embrace this ability to have this feminine being expressed into their love and their care for us. Just as us women, we need to embrace the divine principle of strength and ownership and boundaries, and that also belongs to us. Recognizing and aligning ourselves with this divine spark that lives within us and that will help us access the divine aspect of feminine wisdom to be guided in our soul's journey on this planet, in this existence right now, is the main idea of the sacred feminine wisdom. Every day is sacred. Every task, no matter how simple, is part of your growth. Your fortitude and doing it well and your good intent is what makes it a better task, a better situation. To work with the sacred feminine, you need to have faith. And this faith is having faith in us and the divine. So, I would like to know if anybody has any questions, please go ahead and type them up. I have quite a few people watching tonight, which is wonderful, and I would like to welcome you all. I have surprisingly a large number of men watching tonight, so it's interesting to see that you join and you took the time to listen on how this may apply to you and how you can reconnect with this androgynous part of your soul that is the feminine essence. All right, so I don't see any questions. It looks like I was very clear. If you watch this video or listen to this podcast at a later time than right now, you can post your questions in the comment section of either YouTube, Facebook, or the podcast, and I'm always happy to return and revisit the comments and answer any questions that are left behind. So this was the final part of the Sacred Feminine We will be starting a new series in the fall because I need time to do some research. And the new series in the fall will be, I believe, about the mystery schools and all the other cultural, mystery schools, the different thoughts and cultures on spirituality.